The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by six local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Good morning. You are listening to WYSO in Yellow Springs. We've got the Book Nook coming up for you. And today on the program, Trace Conger will join us to talk about the third book in his series about a private detective they call Finn. And this is a very intriguing mystery. And we'll be talking to Trace Conger about it immediately following NPR News. The title is The Prison Guard's Son, and these books are set somewhat in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's the Book Nook coming up following the news. Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Trace Conger. His new novel is The Prison Guard's Son. He joins us by telephone from, where are you, Warren County?
I am. I'm in Lebanon, so I'm not too far away from Yellow Springs.
All right. Well, I see I have this lovely bookmark here, which you've distributed to me very kindly, and I've noticed that this is not the first book about a guy named Mr. Finn. Tell us about this series.
Sure. So The Prison Guard's Son is the third book in the series. And the series follows Finn Harding, who essentially goes by Mr. Finn for some confidentiality with his clients, who is an underground private investigator. He is a PI who has lost his license, and because he is no longer able to secure the work that most PIs would do, working with law firms and businesses, that type of thing. Because he can no longer kind of go that route, he ends up working for criminals, and it's how he prolongs his career and how he essentially makes his income. So because of the people he works with are involved in some pretty shady things, he typically finds himself in some pretty nasty situations.
And he's based in Cincinnati?
He is. The first book is based in Cincinnati. However, it does take Finn to Maine. The second book has Finn in Indianapolis. And the third book, The Prison Guard's Son, actually has him beginning in Parkersburg, West Virginia. So kind of in and around the Midwest for the most part.
How did you get the idea for this? What was your motivation?
I met a retired private investigator probably about 8 years ago. And he had a practice in Florida, kind of a small practice. And at the time, or several years ago, he had just been married. I think he had a child on the way. And he was in some pretty severe financial dire straits. His agency was drying up. He had no clients. And he was kind of faced with some pretty tough decisions to make as far as how he was going to support his family. And one day, kind of like, something out of a Hollywood movie or an old noir novel, this shady person comes into his office and essentially asked him to take an illegal case to procure some illegal information on someone. And the PI, understood, that there could be some issues. If he were to be caught doing that, he could lose his license. And he essentially turned the person away, and he said, "Well, I'm sorry, I can't help you." And the client left a business card with him, and so the PI kind of reflected on that decision and the possibilities and, his financial situation. And to make a long story short, he explained how he called him back, and he took the case. Now, you have to keep in mind, this is long before the Internet and where, anyone can get online and find out information about anyone else in a matter of seconds. So he essentially took the case, and he told me that he worked for this gentleman for about 30 days, and over that 1 month period, he made about as much as he did in the previous 2 years. He didn't really go into detail on what he did. I mean, it wasn't anything like, you know, highly illegal. I have an inkling that he was just procuring some illegal information, probably some medical records about someone. And so he did. He didn't get caught, you know. And I asked him. I said, what would have happened had you gotten caught? And he said, well, you know, I don't like to think about it. And so that kind of was the beginnings of the idea of Mr. Finn, because I kept wondering, man, what if he did get caught? And then everything that he was hoping, you know, to establish with his agency and everything he was working for to support his family kind of crumbled, you know, and he lost all that kind of, you know, where would he go from there? And that's kind of where the series picks up.
The book is The Prison Guard's Son. Trace Conger wrote it. It's his third Mr. Finn novel. This seems to be a very thick vein of writing, this vein where you have the private investigator who has to kind of operate in the gray areas because he's, you know, got financial problems or his family's a mess or he's got some different reasons. I'm picturing James Garner as Jim Rockford living in that little trailer by the water. You know, I'm picturing a guy who – you talked about him losing his license. How do they get a license? How do they earn it? How do they keep it? Why do they lose it? Is it because they break the law?
Yeah, essentially. So if you think about it, and a lot of people don't realize this, because I think a lot of people have this romanticized notion of what a PI does, right? He's the guy who's outside your girlfriend or your spouse's house, you know, at the night with his camera trying to catch someone, you know, cheating on their partner. But the reality is most PIs work for law firms or work for corporations doing background checks or investigating claims, that type of thing. Mm. And they are licensed by the state, you know, just like, you know, a doctor or a lawyer might be. So if they're in a situation where they have like an ethical violation and they lose that license, you know, I understand there's a process they can go through to get it back. But, I mean, that, you know, there are no guarantees there. And if that's kind of what you do working for these law firms, you know, you can't do that anymore. You can no longer file paperwork. You can no longer get on a witness stand, you know, and no law firm, no attorney is going to continue to work with you if you're, you know, if you've lost your license for whatever reason. So, and to be honest, I didn't even know that as I was starting to get into it until I had this chance meeting with this now retired PI. And I just kind of, you know, had that same idea that I think most people do from Hollywood and from other novels, that it's just anyone can do it, and there's really, you know, there's no licensing or anything behind it, and that just isn't the case.
All right. Who's Mr. Finn? Give us his backstory.
Well, so Mr. Finn is essentially someone who, when he left college, wasn't really sure what he was going to do, and he ended up working for a law firm. And just through happenstance, he ended up getting his PI license and going the legit route for, you know, several years. And he just came under a situation where, similar to the story I recounted earlier with the PI, the real-life PI who I had met, he was going through somewhat of a divorce. He had a daughter with his wife. They were both kind of struggling for custody, and I think his mind was clouded a little bit, and he was presented an opportunity that he knew he should not have taken, but he decided to take anyway, and things did not go well for him. And that's kind of a lot of that is told in the backstory of the Shadow Broker. But he's then is forced to essentially work for some very low life and dark people. And I think when he begins in the Shadow Broker, he, you know, takes these cases just kind of seeing them as a means to an end and not really seeing the danger that he might be in. And then he quickly discovers that, you know, not only is he now kind of in the crosshairs, but his family, including his ex-wife, his daughter, and his now live-in father have kind of been pulled into some of these dangerous situations as well. So he's forced with extracting himself from these situations, but also protecting his family as well.
The Shadow Broker was the first book in the series of Mr. Finn. Trace Conger joins us. His new one is The Prison Guard's Son. And as the story begins, Mr. Finn is being approached by a potential client. And this client has kind of an iffy project that Mr. Finn wants to be sure he can do. He wants the money, but he's a little bit reluctant to take this case, and from what I understand, you were inspired to pick up this particular story from a real crime that took place in England. Explain.
I was. So I had read about the James Bulger case several years ago. The actual case itself took place in 1993 in England. And essentially what happened was a two-year-old boy, James Bulger, was abducted and later murdered by two, at the time, nine-year-old boys. They were caught and convicted. They had turned 10. So when they were convicted at age 10, they were, I believe, the youngest to be convicted of murder in England at the time. I don't know if that's still true or not. But essentially then these two individuals were put in kind of a juvenile detention. They never actually served any time in jail. And they were released 8 years later with new identities. And the case is, you know, fascinating on a variety of levels, just given the age of the victim, the age of the criminals, the whole idea of this veil of secrecy, almost this witness protection aspect around it. And one of the things I've tried to do in this series is in each novel, you know, the individual or individuals that Finn is hired to find, you know, it gets harder and harder. So in the first book, he was faced with finding a black market information hacker. In the second book, it was a nomad criminal banker who moves around. And so as I was plotting out the third book, I'm thinking, you know, how am I going to make this? What's the hardest thing I can think of? And I kept coming back to this whole idea of witness protection, you know, because I know that, you know, anyone who's been in the program who has followed the quote-unquote rules and have not done anything, you know, dumb to divulge their own identity have never been found. So I kept coming back to that, and then that whole idea kind of melded with this idea of, you know, the events of the Bulger case in 1993 around these two, you know, now adults who have been released and are living under, you know, the English version of witness protection. So those two ideas kind of melded together, and as I was plotting it out and thought, well, you know, it's a case I could never shake. It's a case that, you know, one of the things that Finn deals with in each of his books is because he has a young daughter, you know, he's constantly thinking about her safety and how the things he does could compromise that. So it kind of fit nicely as far as this, you know, this whole idea of a child victim and his kind of emotional connection, not only to the case, but to his family and his daughter as well.
And the prison guard son of your title is that James Bulger inspired character.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely not a retelling of that story. It really just uses a similar crime as kind of a jumping-off point to kind of activate the rest of the story.
You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I'll continue with my conversation with Trace Conger right after this. In case you're just tuning in, you are listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and today my guest on the program is Trace Conger. And we're talking about his latest detective novel in the Mr. Finn series. It's called The Prison Guard's Son. All right, so without wrecking it for readers, tell us, set the scene, what's happening here? What can you tell us about the story?
Well, I'll say that usually in most kind of noir cases, as with other noir novels, the first chapter is really dedicated to Finn kind of learning about this case or someone propositioning Finn to take this case. So the prison guard son starts off with this boy's father meeting with him in a park and basically explains the situation about what he wants. And he is hiring Finn to track down these two individuals who are living under witness protection with the idea that, you know, this father is going to take his vengeance upon these two once they're found. And so Finn has somewhat of an emotional dilemma in this novel, more so than he has in the first two. In the first two, a lot of the conflict was, you know, much more physical. I mean, he was just in physical danger. Whereas in The Prison Guard's Son, you know, it's much more emotional. It's much more this idea of, you know, what is the moral struggle? Does Finn find these people? And if he does, is he willing to, you know, give their identities to this vengeance father who is, you know, essentially going to murder them. So he knows that if he does find and give them up, that he's signing their death warrants for the most part. And I think the most interesting aspect of the book is, you know, once he's kind of, you know, shoulders deep in this investigation, he starts learning things about these two individuals that make that decision even harder. You know, at first he thought, no problem, it's a horrible crime. You know, he's reading the case file and he sees the crime images, and his mind is made up that these, you know, these two adults basically have to pay for what it is that they've done. And as he learns more about them and he learns more about the various things that they've done with their lives, sometimes those choices are no longer as easy to make as he thought they were.
Well, he's on a vigilante mission, and as we discover, as we get further into the story, when he wants information, he's willing to resort to extreme violence to obtain it.
Yeah, I think Finn is a character who doesn't really see the world as right and wrong. You know, he sees there is a lot of gray, and he is a person who can justify certain activities if he thinks that in the end it's okay for him to do so. So you're right. I mean, I think in all of the books, you know, he makes some situations that, or makes some decisions that most of us would probably never, luckily, have to make. But Finn is just, he's the type of character that, you know, if he has to, you know, inflict a little bit of pain to get some information that's going to, you know, help save someone's life down the line, or, you know, or help him, complete the case or meet his objectives, then he's more than willing to do that. He really doesn't have, I don't want to say he doesn't have a moral compass, because he does, but he really looks at things as the people he's dealing with are criminals, so he doesn't really care if anyone gets hurt. I mean, he's not the type of person who's going to go and, you know, hurt an innocent person to further his own agenda. But if it's a criminal, you know, he doesn't really care.
He spends a bit of time down in Texas doing some investigating down there, and I loved your device where you have him driving this increasingly decrepit vehicle, and he starts to almost kind of match up with the vehicle, his own physical condition becomes somewhat battered as well.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you caught that. And there's these can be some dark novels, because they do deal with some dark subject matter, but you know, there's some humor in each of these novels as well. And one of the, I think, the best devices in the third book is early on, he's having a kind of an argument with his father about Columbo, and how, you know, Finn thinks Columbo is just a horrible, horrible TV show, because you always know, you know, whoever walks on stage behind or walks on screen behind Peter Falk did it. You know, there's really no mystery to it. And so he and his father kind of have this love-hate relationship with the show. And, you know, as viewers of Columbo might know, Columbo drives this old, you know, beat-up jalopy, this broken-down car. So, you know, part of it was that. It was really kind of drawing a connection not only to his physical state as he kind of breaks down, but also kind of this callback to, you know, this whole idea of Columbo and how he's kind of, he doesn't even realize it at the time, but he's kind of mirroring all the things that he hates about this old crime TV show.
Well, we do love those reliable devices, don't we? They give us a sense of comfort. We know that when they beam the guy in the red shirt down to the surface of the planet, he's going to die.
Not making it back.
We know. So, my guest is Trace Conger. The book is The Prison Guard's Son. It's his third book in the Mr. Finn series. What's the process been like for you? How did you decide you were going to start writing books? How did you start publishing books? What's the process?
Yeah, well, for as long as I can remember, you know, I've loved to write short stories. I've loved books. And when I was in college, I went in thinking that I was going to be a criminologist. I was in the criminology and sociology program. And that first year just came to realize that, you know, this isn't as exciting as maybe I thought it was. I kind of had some different ideas, I guess, of what I thought that would entail. And I ended up meeting with my advisor at the time to really try and figure out, you know, what is my collegiate track here? And I didn't even realize it at the time, but my advisor was Jack Matthews at Ohio University, who's a pretty accomplished short story writer in his own right. He's since passed away. But, you know, he started talking about the creative writing program. And, you know, I talked about how, kind of, you know, I always love to write. I love stories as far back to high school. And so he kind of, I guess, took me under his wing a little bit and took me through the various aspects of the creative writing program at OU, and I loved it. So when I left OU, I had these great dreams of being a novelist and all this, which were quickly crushed by the real world when I moved to New York and had to come up with like $1,500 in rent in 3 weeks. So I ended up as a publicist in a public relations firm, which has kind of led to a variety of different things. But about 10 years ago, you know, I really had this epiphany where I realized I'm not doing what it is that I want to do. And I'd never lost sight of kind of those dreams of being a writer. So I thought, you know, now is the time, now or never, that I really need to, you know, dedicate and focus on this. It's not just going to happen kind of on its own. And it wasn't happening up until that point. So that was when I decided I was going to stop. At the time, I was a senior copywriter at an ad agency in Cincinnati, as so many novelists have started as copywriters. And so I decided to leave that position, and I started freelance writing. And then that gave me enough time to really, really focus and dedicate on my fiction. So I wrote The Shadow Broker in 2014. It was published at in October of that year, and then have written one a year ever since. And I also continue to write short stories as well. So I've had a few of those published in magazines and anthologies.
Yes, I think some guy named James Patterson used to be a copywriter in an ad agency.
Yeah, I've heard something about that.
My guess is
I think he's got a bright future.
Yeah, my guess is Trace Conger. The book is The Prison Guard's Son. And these are independently issued novels that Trace puts out. And in honor of the fact that indie authors are doing such great work, and there's so many of them around these days, we're having the first nationwide Indie Author Day, October 8th, and libraries across the country are holding various events to honor independent authors. And the Washington Centerville Public Library is having an event as part of their second Monday Authors Program at the Centerville Library, 111 West Spring Valley Road in Centerville. Five indie authors will be at the Centerville Library lobby on Monday, October 10th, from 1 until 3 o'clock. You can meet these five authors, and one of them is Trace Conger, who's going to be coming in from Lebanon. And we also have Liz Ball from Montgomery County will be there. Her book is 50 States of Fun. You might see her work, her Hidden Pictures artwork, twice a week in the Dayton Daily News. J.S. Bailey will be there from Claremont County, who writes supernatural suspense novels. Her book is called Servant. M. Ruth Myers, who has been on this program for her book No Game for a Dame, will be there. And she won the Seamus for that book, Maggie Sullivan Mystery. I heard a rumor that you might have gotten that same award, Trace. Is that true?
It is, yeah. I actually won it the year after Ruth did.
What is a Seamus?
So the Seamus Award is a crime fiction award put out by the PI Writers of America every year, and it's given out at the BoucherCon event. So I won it last year for The Shadow Broker, as it was published in 2014. And they just gave out the awards I think last week in New Orleans for this round, but they recognize kind of excellence in crime fiction in a variety of different categories. But the you know, the real focus there is that the protagonist you know, has to be a private investigator. So they tend to shy away from, you know, the police procedurals and those type of things.
Right. They just had BoucherCon. I don't know who the winners were this year. I'm going to Google that. I forgot to mention one other author will be there on October 10th at the Centerville Library Lobby from 1 till 3 o'clock, besides Liz Ball, J.S. Bailey, M. Ruth Myers, and Trace Conger, who's my guest on the program at this very moment. Kathleen Sutton, who's also from Warren County, will be there with a debut fiction novel capturing real-life struggles called Let Me Lead. And for information on any of this at the Washington Centerville Public Library, they have a phone number you can call, 433-8091. That's 433-8091. And Trace, I'm picturing you in the lobby with a great big pile of books. What are you looking forward to on that day?
That's pretty much exactly what's going to happen. I'll be there with all of the books from the Mr. Finn series. And essentially what I'm looking out of it is I absolutely love to interact with readers and love doing it in person. So I'm looking forward to meeting everyone that I can that comes through those doors, talking about basically anything. Hopefully they'd like to learn more about the Finn series. I would love to talk at length about that and just kind of show them what some of my novels have to offer.
All right, so you're an indie author. What does that involve as far as everything? You have to do everything, the marketing, the publicity, everything?
Absolutely everything. So, I mean, it really is, when you think independent, it really is independent. So, one of the great things about being an author with a traditional publisher or having a traditional contract is, a lot of times, obviously the author is focused on the writing aspect, and to some extent there is definitely some marketing responsibility, after publication. But as far as producing the product, so the editing, the cover design, the formatting, and some marketing, a lot of that is handled by the publisher. So it really frees up the author to just focus on writing the book. So on the flip side, as an independent author, an indie author is responsible for all of that. So not only is it the writing, but it's finding the editor. It's the financial responsibility for all those things as well, because a traditional author technically does pay for some of that. However, it's just withheld from their advance. So they might be paying for it, but they're still making an income from it at the same time. Whereas, for indie authors, it's all out of pocket. And they're responsible for literally every single aspect of producing, publishing, and marketing the product.
Well, the landscape in publishing certainly has changed. And if you read the bestseller list, you'll find indie authors, self-published authors, in the bestseller lists every week. So things have really changed.
I think so. It's definitely, I think the stigma of the self-published author as only having, self-publishing only being a route to not having a traditional contract, I think is fading away. There are a lot of authors, very successful authors, some mid-list authors who are kind of seeing some of the financial viability of kind of the not only the self-publishing model, but the hybrid model as well. So having some titles that are independently published and having some titles that are traditionally published as well. And that's kind of the best of both worlds, because you can exploit a lot of the benefits kind of each of those paths to publication while mitigating some of the disadvantages as well.
Trace Conger joins us. His novel is The Prison Guard's Son. It's the third book in his series featuring the private detective, Mr. Finn, the private investigator who, in this one, is trying to locate these guys who have been hidden away by the government. And during his travels, he keeps encountering this woman with the U.S. Marshals Service. And as a reader, these are some of the really fun interactions for me when he encounters this woman, and their repartee, their exchanges are pretty funny.
Yeah, U.S. Marshal Valerie Cheatham is essentially the case handler for these two individuals. Finn does not know that at the time, and he kind of meets her in a very chance way when he is T-boned while following one of these suspects. And without giving too much away, he subsequently learns very quickly that this person is a little more, active in his case than he first thinks that she is. And I mentioned kind of the moral issues that Finn faces in the novel. And Valerie Cheatham is kind of the same way. I mean, she is a person. She is doesn't pull any punches. She is, as readers will find, is willing to bend some of the rules to essentially keep these two individuals hidden, because that's her job. That's her responsibility. So, she's definitely a foil to Finn, whereas he's ready, to at any cost find these people. She's kind of his opposite, because she's ready at any cost to protect these people. And I think it kind of leads to some very interesting interactions between the two.
Well, I have to give you credit. You've got some lovely twists in this novel, The Prison Guard's Son. And I read a lot in this genre, and I think that your work stands up. I think it's good stuff.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Have you got another book in the pipeline?
Working on one now. It's actually not a Finn novel. I have recently, actually just this week, sent out a suspense, more so horror novella to a publisher for consideration. And the novel that I'm working on now is kind of an extension of that novella. So I want to put the wraps on that. And then I have already outlined another crime novel, which I'm not exactly sure if it's going to be a thin novel or not. It might be, but I had introduced some characters in the second book, Scar Tissue, and I'm thinking about maybe using some of those characters for this, and it might go a different direction. So I probably won't know that until I get into the actual writing of it. But Finn isn't someone that I'm really ready to give up on yet, so he might definitely be back.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, it's really been a pleasure to talk to you about your work.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Vic. I really appreciate it. It was great talking to you.
My guest has been Trace Conger, and his Mr. Finn novel, the third in the series, is The Prison Guard's Son. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for tuning in. And just hold on. If you're looking at the clock, don't touch that dial. We just completed our interview with Trace Conger, and we have a little bonus for you this morning, a Book Nook bonus. We're going to bring you an excerpt from an interview I did with M. Ruth Myers. She is one of the other authors who will be appearing at the Indie Authors event at the Centerville Library. And we'll bring you that excerpt from our interview with Ruth Myers talking about her novel No Game for a Dame right after this. You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for tuning in this morning. As I mentioned a moment ago, we've got a little Book Nook bonus for you this morning. During the first two segments of our program today, we talked to Trace Conger about his new novel, The Prison Guard's Son. And Trace will be one of the authors appearing at the Washington Centerville Public Library, located at 111 West Spring Valley Road. And this is the second Monday authors program that they have there at the library. October 10th, he will be there from 1 until 3 o'clock, and he will be joined by four other authors, including Liz Ball from Montgomery County, J.S. Bailey from Claremont County, Kathleen Sutton from Warren County, and M. Ruth Myers from Greene County. And Ruth was on the program when she put out her book, No Game for a Dame, which is the featured book that she'll have at the library. And we interviewed her about it, and we're going to bring you a segment from that interview from the best of the Book Nook. And your book is set in Dayton, Ohio, and it's late 1930s, is it?
Correct, 1938, okay. The fall.
And Maggie Sullivan is a private eye.
She is.
Tell us how you got the idea for this character.
Well, I find the 1930s and 40s to be a very interesting period, both in themselves, but also for women. I think for both the period and the women, it's a kind of a frontier of transition between old and new. And I'm fascinated by the women of the era because they are becoming really one of the first wave career women, going beyond the traditional jobs that have been allowed women, such as teaching and nursing. They're for the first time leaving farms and going to live not with a relative or a respectable widow woman where they're boarding while they teach necessarily, but for the first time, as in Maggie's case, to, of course, she grew up in the city of Dayton, so she's not leaving home, but career women could live in a rooming house or a boarding house. She lives at Mrs. Z's rooming house with other women. One of them is a cigarette girl in the clubs in Dayton and is a very smart woman, and various ones doing various things. So they have that freedom. It's a time when they not only can drive cars, but can start to own them if they earn enough money. And since they are earning money, they're no longer locked into marriage. They can support themselves. Still very unusual. But I guess I had the advantage of knowing some women from the era and growing up around a couple of them, hearing stories of the hijinks of the era. And I just think they were incredibly gutsy and fun. And I wanted to capture some of that fun.
And your title, No Game for a Dame, is indicative of what readers can expect, because you really plunge into the vernacular of the period and the particular way that people spoke. And to use that sort of terminology, Maggie Sullivan is a really tough gal.
She is a gumshoe.
She's a gumshoe.
With great gams.
Yeah. How did you immerse yourself in the verbiage of the period?
Well, I think I've always had an ear for speech differences. It's something that just has always fascinated me. So a little bit of that, and also reading books from the period. I read a lot of books set in this period when I was growing up. You know, the old ones you could get marked down for a nickel, and the old mysteries and things. So, you know, I had absorbed some of it that way. And again, listening to people who were of an age to have been in their 20s in that era, and did some consulting with sources to try and make sure that I wasn't moving anything into the era that shouldn't have been there.
Mm. And I understand that you have a background in journalism, and that you at one point were writing for a very famous publication in Dayton, Ohio.
I was indeed. And you see, I put it out of business. I wrote for the morning paper, the Journal Herald, and was right in downtown Dayton, so in the thick of where this story is set, and of course was until recently also still the home of the Dayton Daily News. So grand old building.
And give our listeners some sense of the plot here. With a mystery, I hate to give too much away. What do you want to tell our readers and listeners out there about the story to entice them to read it, but not to give away too much?
Okay. Well, basically, it's a story about a guy with a really bad toupee who comes into Maggie's office and tells her she'll get her nose busted if she doesn't keep it out of some questions that she's been asking about a man that this guy obviously knows and has some connection with. When he starts to threaten her physically, because Maggie has a pretty smart mouth, typical of the PI genre that this is set in, they get into something of a physical altercation in the office, and she comes out the better and tells him that if he bothers her again, he'll be sorry. The next day, he ends up dead, and she's hauled in on suspicion of murder, which leads her into deeper realization that what has seemed a routine case that she's working on involving a young businessman has a lot deeper roots than that. And she finds herself up against a crime boss with a really sadistic second in command, and we're off and going.
And it's all set in Dayton, Ohio, and then there's very many familiar landmarks that readers will encounter.
Yes, at least older readers, some of them. Yeah.
The book is No Game for a Dame, a Maggie Sullivan mystery. M. Ruth Myers wrote it, and Ruth joins us in studio today to talk about it. This isn't your first book, is it?
No, it's my 10th novel, actually.
Tell us about your previous books and what's going on with them today.
I have been writing for a long time, obviously, and started out with suspense novels, which is what this falls in, was kind of nudged toward getting into romance writing, which was in its heyday then, and so basically did 9 books for Big Six publishers, and then became a little disenchanted with many of the things that I saw happening and the consolidation of big publishers continually gobbling up smaller and smaller ones. So writers had fewer and fewer opportunities to really do what they wanted, and finally just gave it up for quite a while. Mm-hmm. But I think when you really have a passion for writing, it's hard to ever let go of it. So meanwhile, the ebook revolution was happening. And when I finished, or was in the process of finishing, No Game for a Dame, I started to look at sending to old-style publishers, traditional publishers, and discover that you still have to submit the same way that you did 20 years ago, that in this digital age, you still can't do it digitally.
Mm.
And meanwhile, had become a big fan of e-readers myself, and so decided I would just do that and see what it was like, and I'm having a ball. I really enjoy the freedom of it, and it's just really neat, the more direct connection with readers that you get that way and the sense of control that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a lot of fun for me.
Okay, so you had these other nine books, and some of these, I'm guessing, are on imprints that I would know. What are some of the imprints that you were on?
Most of them were on Ballantine.
Okay.
The last one was on Dell.
Okay.
They have, at this point, and I should say that most of them were picked up for foreign translation rights in one or more languages. And a couple were optioned for film, so I did some work in that too. At this point, they're all out of print, and
okay.
I recently did the little dance to get my rights back on them. And I'm in the process of cleaning up one of those to reissue in a couple of weeks, hopefully.
So Ballantine is one of these imprints that was swallowed up by the mega house Random House.
Well, after swallowing up a few itself, yeah.
Right. And so now, like a lot of authors who have works that have gone out of print or that are older, you have an opportunity to make these available as electronic books?
Correct. That's the only format that I'll be reissuing in, at least in the beginning. And I won't be doing all of them, just a couple that I particularly like and that are more the mystery suspense type of books.
So is this the first Maggie Sullivan, or were there others?
No, this is a new book.
Okay.
It's the first Maggie Sullivan. The second one, I'm on the downhill slope of finishing that one, and the third one is plotted out. So we basically know where this series is going through the end of World War II.
Okay. So this book that you just mentioned that is part of your existing catalog that's
yes.
been out of print. Which book is this that you're working on getting reissued?
That is A Touch of Magic.
And tell us about that.
Okay, that...
is it romance?
No.
Okay.
No, it's a thriller, although there is maybe a little thread of romance in it. I have always been viewed as a tougher writer and have had a decent number, I'm told, more than the usual male readers of my work. But A Touch of Magic involves a fourth-generation sleight-of-hand artist who is recruited by the State Department to thwart an international terrorist by doing what sleight-of-hand artists do.
And what's your time frame on that? When is it set?
That was actually a contemporary when I wrote it. So the setting is the 1980s.
Okay.
And I looked at it to make sure that it still seemed pretty timely and got feedback from several readers who didn't know me who said, wow, you know, this still is very timely. So,
well, I'm impressed when you say that men like to read your stuff because I didn't know men read books. I'm just kidding. You know, women really do. According to statistics,
yes.
Women are the readers. And if a guy is reading, that is fabulous.
It is.
Now, I know there are men out there right now going, hey, what do you mean? I read. Well, a lot of men don't read fiction, for one thing.
Correct. They don't read fiction. There is also, I'm sorry to say, and I think this happens very early in life, there's a reluctance to read things by women authors. And frequently, I mean, we have to take part of the blame of that. There is a lot of fluffy stuff that women put in when they're trying to do suspense novels. Again, it's usually because of market pressures. They see they will sell more if they do that, or they get feedback that that's what readers want, or that's what the publisher wants. from them. So, you know, it's not always the fault of the author. But I do think that's something that makes men reluctant. They don't know as much what they're going to get.
Mm. My guest is M. Ruth Myers. Her new novel is No Game for a Dame. It's a Maggie Sullivan mystery. And she joins us on the program today. I see in your acknowledgments that you thank someone here who was on this program a number of years ago, and I really think that she is the grand dame of Yellow Springs novelists, and that's Suzanne Clauser.
Absolutely. I would agree with you on all counts. She has taught many of us a great deal about the writing craft, and I know I'm a far better writer for having had her edit my work and tell me what I needed to do and give feedback through the years.
And you have been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO, and that was a special treat for you this morning, a little excerpt from an interview we did with M. Ruth Myers for her novel No Game for a Dame, and that book came out a while back. We had her on the program, and she is one of the authors who will be featured at a special event. As we mentioned right at the end of that segment, we paid tribute to Suzanne Clauser, who was on this program about 15 years ago, and she passed away earlier this year, and she was an extraordinary writer and a real, real book lover, and we're going to miss her here in Yellow Springs. The event coming up at the Centerville Library is part of Indie Author Day, which is on October 8th. Libraries across North America are hosting various events, and as part of the Second Monday Authors Program at the Centerville Library, there will be an event for indie authors, and five of them will be appearing there, including M. Ruth Myers, who you just heard talking about No Game for a Dame, and also Trace Conger, who was on the first part of the program this morning with his new detective novel, The Prison Guard's Son. And there will be five indie authors in the lobby at the Centerville Library, 111 West Spring Valley Road. And this is on Monday, October 10th, from 1 until 3 o'clock. You can meet them there. And they will include Liz Ball from Montgomery County, whose Hidden Pictures artwork appears twice weekly in the Dayton Daily News. Her featured book is 50 States of Fun. Also, J.S. Bailey from Claremont County, who writes supernatural suspense novels, and her book is called Servant. Trace Conger will be there with The Prison Guard's Son. M. Ruth Myers, who you just heard, will be there with No Game for a Dame. And Trace and Ruth have both won Seamus Awards for their books. Also, Kathleen Sutton from Warren County will be there as the fifth author as part of Indie Author Day at the Centerville Library, 111 West Spring Valley Road, on Monday, the 10th of October. And Kathleen Sutton has a featured book called Let Me Lead. And this is fiction that captures real-life struggles. That's the indie authors appearing at the Centerville Library. And that's for Indie Author Day, which is officially on October 8th. And they will be there for the 10th. On October 10th, the Second Monday Authors Program at Centerville Library, 111 West Spring Valley Road. For information, you can contact the library, and that number is 433-8091. And there's also an Indie Author Day website, indieauthorday.com, that you can peruse. And speaking of book events, there's one more I'd like you to be aware of, and that is just around the corner. This Monday, October 3rd, Books and Beer at the Yellow Springs Brewery, and I plan to be there. I hope to see some of you there. This is an event in conjunction with the Greene County Library Foundation, and it's to benefit some reading programs that they have at the library, and you can get information on this benefit event at the Yellow Springs Brewery by going to the website booksandbeer.org. That's booksandbeer.org. It starts at 5:30 at the Yellow Springs Brewery in Yellow Springs, and I will be there during the early portion of the evening. We'll be talking about books. Some of us will probably be drinking some of that beer they have over there at the Yellow Springs Brewery, and I hope to see some of you there because books and beer, they really go together very well, particularly at this event. And I'm really looking forward to this. So if you come by early in the evening, hopefully I'll see you and you can say hello. It starts at 5:30 and just runs for a few hours there at the Yellow Springs Brewery. That's Monday night, October 3rd, here in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Books and Beer. And again, their website is booksandbeer.org. And I'm looking forward to talking about some tasty books and maybe quaffing one of those very intellectual beers over at the Yellow Springs Brewery. So stop by and say hello. You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook and beer, I'm Vic McKeonis.